This insect is a biological control agent against mile a minute weed. And mile a minute is a problem for a variety of reasons. It's an annual invasive vine that can grow up to 6 meters a year. It germinates earlier in the spring than many natives, and as you can see, the backward projecting thorns on the stems and the leaf stems help it to climb and form these dense monocultures. Mile a minute seeds prolifically and forms a persistent seed bank, and it can grow in a variety of soils from wetlands to upland forests. Mile a minute established in the U.S. in the 1930s via a shipment of contaminated holly seed from Japan. The seed was planted at the Gable Nursery in Stewartstown, Pennsylvania, and mile a minute emerged, and the owner was really intrigued by the blue fruits. He let the plant set seed, and the nursery was abandoned a few years later. In 1948, Moule cited mile a minute as a dangerous weed that should be eradicated before it had the opportunity to spread further, but clearly nothing was done. So mile a minute can now be found in a variety of mid-Atlantic and New England states. This map is a little outdated. It's in the process of being updated. The yellow circle is the Gable Nursery in Stewartstown in York County, Pennsylvania. Counties that are green had mile a minute prior to 1995. Red counties had mile a minute after 1995. And we're anticipating with this update adding a number of counties in Pennsylvania, New York, and Massachusetts. Because there were no natural enemies in the U.S. that were exerting enough control on mile a minute to control its growth at all, the Forest Service partnered with Chinese scientists to look for insects feeding on mile a minute in Japan, in China, which was the presumed site of origin of the plant. The surveys in China revealed over 100 insect species feeding on mile a minute weed. While there were leaf feeders, there were also stem borers, fruit, and seed feeders. None of these feeding guilds were present in the U.S. Several of the insects found in this survey appeared to have a narrow host range, and further testing was done on two in particular, including our weevil Rhinoconomus latipes. In China, the weevil was tested on 49 plant species. This was from a variety of families, including crop plants, and it was then shipped to the ARS lab in Newark, Delaware for further testing and quarantine, mostly on Polygonaceae. Much of this work was done by one of Dr. Huff's former grad students, Keith Kolpetzer, and they found that the weevil did not feed at all on any plants outside the Polygonaceae. While there was some minor adult feeding on a few Polygonaceae, this was about 1 to 3% of the feeding rate on mile a minute weed. And most importantly, there was no egg laying or larval survival on any host other than mile a minute through all the testing. Based on the results of these tests, the USDA issued a permit for field release in July of 2004. Briefly, I want to go through the life cycle of the insect. The weevil goes from egg to adult in approximately 26 days in laboratory conditions. Now, the adult is small. It's only about 2 millimeters long, and the females deposit these small eggs on the stems and leaves. Eggs hatch after approximately a week, and the neonate larvae bore into the stem within about 10 minutes of hatching. They feed within the stem for about 7 to 10 days before dropping out of the stem to the soil to pupate for approximately a week before emerging as adults. The adults are jet black when they first emerge, but they gain this orange color after feeding on mile a minute. So for our dispersal and establishment studies, we had 3 field sites, and we set up this release array that consisted of a central release point surrounded by monitoring points on concentric circles located 5 meters apart. Because it's more difficult to find a weevil, a lower probability at a further distance from the release, there are more monitoring points on the outer circles. We also had monitoring points located at 1 meter and 2.5 meters from the release. And we released 450 weevils in the center of each array on June 9th of 2005. This is what it actually looked like in the field. All those bamboo poles represent monitoring points. We would center a 1 meter square quadrat frame around each point. And some of the things we were counting in the monitoring points included weevils, again noting whether they were orange or black. We estimated adult feeding damage. We looked for the presence or absence of eggs. Again, based on the small size of the eggs, presence, absence was the best we could do in the field. And we estimated the percent cover of mile a minute weed in each plot. We were also interested to see how many generations per year the insect could complete in our field studies. In China, this was reported as 1 to 2 generations per year. And we set up cages in our fields, put a potted plant with weevils in each cage, allowed the weevils to oviposit and remove the adults. We waited for the next generation to develop, gave those adults a new plant, allowed them to oviposit, remove the adults, and continued this throughout the season. We had 4 generations emerge by late October, and you can see a black adult feeding in a terminal. This is very typical activity for the newly emerged adults and the feeding damage that they cause. Now this data synced well with what we were seeing in the monitoring quadrats. This is the proportion of quadrats with eggs, and you can see for the majority of both 2005 and 2006, 40 to 60% of our quadrats had eggs. We also notice a very tight fit both years in the decline in oviposition between late August and late September. Now this fit pretty well with our day length data. Approximately 60% of quadrats had eggs at 14 and a half hours of day length. This fell to about 30% at 12 and a half hours, and by the time day length fell to about 11 hours per day, oviposition had essentially ceased in the field. And this last peak in oviposition in late August corresponds with seeing the last adults emerging in October, as we saw in our field cages. The weevils successfully overwintered at all 3 release sites in both 2005 and 2006, and depending on the weather in the spring, they're basically emerging about the same time as the plants. So by the time the plants are 2 or 3 inches tall, we're seeing a heavy amount of feeding damage. And this shows that early in the spring, it's very easy to pick mile a minute out from the surrounding vegetation just based on the feeding damage from the weevil adults. And most of the leaves in this slide that are not damaged are Persicaria sagittata, which is the closest related congener. And we've seen no weevil activity on this plant, which was predicted by the host specificity testing that this just wasn't a viable host. This slide shows numerous weevil adults feeding in the terminal tips. This is in early July at one of our field sites, the Laurels. Because our mile a minute cover varied greatly within our sites, we felt that if we were looking at weevil population per quadrat, we were basically weighing a plot with 1% cover equal to a plot with 100% cover. So we chose to look at a density measurement. We took the average percent cover for a given sample date and location and multiplied it by the number of quadrats with mile a minute. So if our average cover was 50% and we looked at 40 quadrats with mile a minute, we said we essentially looked at a 20 meter square patch of mile a minute. And we divided the total number of weevils counted by that patch size to generate a density measure. So if we look at the weevil population growth over the 3 years of field data, we see that our density measurement of weevils per meter squared of mile a minute is increasing at all 3 sites. However, the increase is the most dramatic at the Laurels. This is the site with the largest monoculture of mile a minute weed. And this year, we peaked at about 140 weevils per meter squared of mile a minute weed at the Laurels. In terms of dispersal, it's not quite as exciting as Weevil Knievel here, but we are interested in how the weevils were moving both within the release arrays and beyond the arrays. So based on our 450 weevils released in the center of each array in June of 2005, by the end of that field season, the weevils had reached the 25-meter ring at the Laurels, 15 meters at the BVA CREP site, and 20 meters at the BVA wetland. However, in that first year, we found that we really underestimated how far and fast they would move. So this is the Laurels, again, our Google Earth photo. And this is the release site in red. And the weevils cleared a tree line around this site and made it to mile a minute patches and surrounding hedgerows about 200 meters apart, away from the release. Now this prompted more detailed mapping with GPS in 2006. Again, we have our release point in red. All the patches are green are undamaged mile a minute. The yellow is mile a minute with some form of weevil activity. So about a year post-release, most of the activity is around the area of release. However, we are seeing weevil activity up to 800 meters away. A similar map of, again, a year post-release at the Brandywine Valley Association, we have our wetland release and our CREP release, shows that most of the patches between the two release sites have weevil activity, and the weevils are also finding very small, isolated patches of myelominate weed. By 2007, approximately three field seasons post-release, weevils from the Laurels release traveled 5 miles to the Stroudwater Research Center. And similar dispersal has been seen in New Jersey, with weevils released from Abbott's Meadow, making it approximately 3.5 miles after 2 years. And in West Virginia, two releases were done on Muskingum Island in the Ohio River National Wildlife Refuge, and the weevils cleared the Ohio River and found myelominate patches approximately 2 kilometers away. In conclusion, the weevils can undergo multiple generations per season and have established at all three release sites. They disperse readily to large myelominate populations and small isolated patches, and they're dispersing long distances over varied landscapes. And I'd like to thank all the people and organizations that contributed to this research.
Thank you. We have time for a couple of questions for our speaker.
Yep.
What kind of effect does this have on the biomass production and the feed production?
That's actually what my advisor's going to speak about next, so I won't steal her thunder.
Any other questions for our speaker? We're a little bit ahead of schedule. Now, how about if any of the other speakers? Anyone have a question? I know you had quite a bit of information in your slides. Anybody have questions for Tricia?
Question regarding future distribution. Is there a plan being made for collection or redistribution down the state?
There's a lab in New Jersey that is currently mass rearing the weevil, and we're actually right now formulating my PhD research, which may involve some field insectary-based work and trying to figure that sort of thing out.
Any other questions? No?
Have you observed any predation of weevils in the field?
We've seen them occasionally. Sure, the question was if there's been predation on the weevils observed in the field. We've seen them caught in spider webs occasionally, especially in cages in our greenhouse, but we've not seen too much of that in the field, largely because the weevils, when they're disturbed, drop to the ground. And there's so much leaf litter at that point, we're not going to see what happens once they drop.
A classical component of most post evaluations of these biocontrol agents includes some formal assessment of non-target impacts. And I know that you said that you've been searching and monitoring some of those within your plots. Have you set up anything more formal to evaluate these non-target issues?
We haven't evaluated anything more formal. We do have the two closest related native congeners. In one plot, one of the congeners is abundant in all three, and we've seen absolutely no damage in our cursory looking without having done anything more formal.
Do you think it has any ability to jump to a more unpredictable host?
We don't, and part of that is based on the host specificity. Some of the chemical work that was done demonstrated that myelominate has a very different neoflavonoid complex than any of the natives, and we suspect that that may have some role in the host specificity and in stimulating feeding, so that they're just not getting that cue from the natives.
Okay. Thank you, Melanie.
Thank you.